Finally, we've made it to the uprising of this epic narrative. In the last couple weeks, we've seen and heard the story of the Hebrew people in Egypt. The story opened directly with human need, with the dirt, brick, and straw of the oppression of the Hebrew people in Egypt. And then the work of ordinary women drove the call to action of this story. God doesn't even show up until chapter 3 to surprise Moses and convince him to lead the people. Today, we arrive at the point of God's saving action. Many of you may be puzzling over the end of the passage we read today where God closes the sea to drown the Egyptians. As a second-year seminary student with very little preaching experience, I didn't feel quite ready to work on the theological questions of God's violence in this text. So I focused on other elements. I will leave those questions to your theological imaginations for now. The Hebrew people were in an impossible situation. Following God's design for creation, the people were fruitful and had multiplied in Egypt, but the new Pharaoh feared them and decided to ruthlessly impose hard labor on them. They built cities and did the dirty work for the nation. Even this was not enough for the Pharaoh, who decided that killing babies was the only way to maintain his tyrannical rule over Egyptian society. A whole empire had come to depend on the Israelites' forced labor and subservience. Their oppression was woven into the fabric of this society, their very life and breath constricted to these roles. It likely seemed crazy to imagine that they might extricate themselves from this system to find a better way of life. Who or what could the Israelites look to for help? The Egyptians had some powerful gods that seemed to keep them in power and the system running. They built cities, monuments, and pyramids, edifices that are still around 3,000 years later. Their pantheon of gods could control everything from the harvest to fertility and death, and a lively mythological world provided meaning for their society. But where was Israel's God in all of this? Did Yahweh care about Israel's oppression? Could Yahweh even do anything about this impossible situation? As a microcosm of this larger Exodus story, in our passage today, the Israelites arrived at the Sea of Reeds with Pharaoh's army in pursuit, and they said, "We're going to die. It was better being oppressed in Egypt." They cannot see God, and they cannot see the way forward. We are also in an impossible situation. We live in a time when climate change threatens to destroy the world as we know it. Racism and police violence continue to threaten the lives of Black and other communities of color. Some lawmakers are working to take away the hard-earned rights of women and queer people. Our immigration system has torn children away from their parents, and economic inequality continues to grow, leaving many in poverty. And this U.S. American empire has its own tyrant leader who seeks to hold us captive to this oppressive system, spewing lies and refusing to condemn white supremacy. We even have a global pandemic that has revealed the sickness of this system. These modes of oppression are so woven into our daily lives that most of us participate whether or not we support them. There seems to be no way forward for us, no way to extricate ourselves from a system that oppresses so many people. We have heard the cries saying, "I can't breathe." So where do we look when we can't see a way forward? Our national narratives have created some very compelling gods that we might look to. The stories and myths that drive this society might be a good place to look. Maybe capital will save us, the free market and innovation, or entertainment and social media will bring us to liberation. We might even trust in our individual selves to pull us up from our own bootstraps, or that the melting pot will eventually heal all racial wounds. But these gods, these myths, have only brought us further into the impossible situation we live in today. So what are the gods we trust in? Can we even see or encounter the God of the enslaved Hebrews? This may depend on which characters we identify with in this story. We all come from different parts of these systems of power and oppression, and maybe some of us would better identify with the Egyptians in this story. I would offer that maybe some of us cannot see this God who shows up to the oppressed. Like the Israelites, we may see no way forward and want to give up. Or, like the Egyptians, we may stubbornly follow our own mythology into death and destruction. We cannot see God, and we cannot see the way forward. Finally, in Exodus chapter 7, God begins to act in extraordinary ways. In this narrative, God brings 10 plagues to convince the Egyptians of God's power, followed by the parting of the sea. But which of our characters will be able to recognize, to see this God and act accordingly? These stories were written from a different angle than we might expect. Today, we often look to the Bible as a historical document that will give us an accurate picture of what happened. But ancient cultures, like the Israelites, likely wrote these stories to create theological meaning in a different way. They used myth and folklore to tell stories that helped people understand God in powerful ways, but may not reflect an event that literally happened in history. So where can we recognize and join the saving work of God? First, one way to understand the message of the plague narrative is to see this as the mythological cosmic battle of Yahweh against the Egyptian pantheon of gods. In this telling, the plagues correspond with certain Egyptian gods as a challenge to their power. For instance, the second plague of frogs could be directed at the goddess of childbirth, Heket, who was represented by a frog. And the final plague, the death of the firstborn, could be an attack on Osiris, the judge of the dead and the patron god of Pharaoh. Against these deities, Yahweh, the god of the enslaved Hebrews, dominates with greater power. God is more powerful than societal mythology, the cosmic powers of evil, and tyrant leaders who oppress people. A second way to see God's work in these plague stories is through the creation narrative. In the 10 plagues, there are many parallels to the creation story. Finally, as the Israelites approached the Sea of Reeds in despair, the Lord drove the sea back with a fierce wind. The Hebrew word here, ruach, which is spirit or breath, just like in Genesis 1, where a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. And in both cases, God's creative spirit breath pushes away the waters of chaos. God parts the sea to redeem, to save the Israelites, and this is a replay of creation. God is again making something new, paving the way for the Israelites to be transformed. Throughout these Exodus stories, God seeks to persuade and be known by Pharaoh, Egypt, and even the Israelites. God seeks to reveal God's self through these signs and plagues. God says 8 times that this is so that they may know that I am Yahweh. Over and over again, God acts so that humans will recognize God. God seeks to be known, showing up in the world in perceptible ways. But if this is not met with the human desire to know God, then the human heart is hardened in opposition to God. God invited the people of the Exodus story to see God's action and to see a new way forward. And what about us today? Will we recognize this Yahweh and look to God when we can't see a way forward? If you find yourself in this story as oppressed like the Israelites, maybe you will be able to recognize God and follow God's spirit breath through the chaotic sea to liberation. Or maybe you are in a position of power more akin to the Egyptian people. In this case, your heart may be hardened, and it will be difficult to distinguish Yahweh from the gods and mythologies that keep you in power. Or you may find yourself at a unique mixture of privilege and oppression. At times, hearing God's liberating call, and other times distracted by the stories around you. For those of us who identify more closely with the Egyptians, we may need to listen to the God of the oppressed Hebrews. We will find God in the lament and call to action of those who are most downtrodden by our national mythologies and systems. This God is acting in big ways. In our impossible situation, people are rising up to say, "Let my people go," from many forms of oppression. This summer, Black Lives Matter protests erupted after the police killed George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and the latest cases in a line of violence against Black people. These protests happened at a scale unprecedented in our history. The U.S. has rarely seen protests of this combination of size, intensity, and frequency. These protests have made their way from bigger cities to even smaller towns and suburbs like Elkhart and Goshen. Here in the voices of a lament and protest, we can hear the God of the oppressed calling for emancipation. This God is more powerful than our national myths and tyrant leaders. God invites us to see God's action and to see a new way forward. May we, unlike the Egyptians, be ready to see God through the oppressed and let go of our privilege. May we, like the Israelites, be ready to walk through the sea when God's spirit breath parts the waters and moves in extraordinary ways.